never leaving hers. His thumbs traced small circles, and the fabric of her dress was thin and light enough for her to feel as if she had nothing on at all. She wondered whether he could tell she wasn't wearing any panties, and felt herself growing wet. He pulled her tightly against him, the heat of his body imprinting on her own. With a soft escape of breath, she put her arms around his neck. She could hear the music, and they began to rotate in a slow circle, his body swaying ever so slightly. He smiled then, as if inviting her into his world, and the last of her defenses began to crumble. She knew she wanted this. When she felt his breath on her neck, she trembled. He kissed her gently on her earlobes and her cheek, leaving traces of moisture, and when his lips finally met hers, she felt him restraining himself, as if giving her one last chance to end it. The realization was exhilarating, almost liberating, and when he buried his hands in her hair, she parted her mouth. She heard a soft moan, barely recognizing it as her own, as their tongues came together. He ran his hands over her back and her arms, and then her belly, the sensation like a trail of tiny electric shocks. He traced a finger beneath the swell of her breasts, and her nipples hardened. She could feel her body against his. She brought a hand to his cheek and ran her fingertips over the stubble as he moved back to her neck, nibbling softly while she caressed his chest. Finally, taking his hand, she led him to the bedroom. In the bedroom mirror, she saw him watching her as she found the candles and matches and lit them, placing one candle on the end table and the other on the bureau. The dim light made shadows dance along the walls, and when Hope turned, their eyes met, and all they could do was drink in the sight of each other. She sensed his desire and allowed herself to soak it in before finally taking a step toward him. He did the same, the world between them shrinking, and when they kissed, she relished the moisture and warmth of his tongue. Untucking his shirt, she unbuttoned it slowly, and when it hung open, she traced her fingernail over his stomach and his hip bone. His body was hard and lithe, the muscles of his stomach visible, and she pulled the shirt over his shoulders, allowing it to fall to the floor. Her mouth moved to his neck, and she bit gently at it as she reached for his belt. She unbuckled it, then undid the button on his jeans. As she began to slide the zipper down, she felt his hands begin to move over her breasts. Tugging at his pants, she slid them down, and True stepped back. He untied his boots and slipped them off, his socks after that. Then came the jeans, and finally his boxers. He stood naked before her, his body perfect, like an ancient statue carved from marble. Hope lifted one foot to the bed, then the other, deliberately removing her sandals with tantalizing slowness. True moved toward her, taking her in his arms again. His tongue flickered against her earlobe as he reached for the strap of her sundress. He slid it over one shoulder, then repeated the process with the other strap. The dress fell from her body, crumpling at her feet, their naked bodies coming together. His skin was hot against hers as he ran his finger gently down her spine. She exhaled as his hand drifted even lower, and in a single motion, he scooped her up, kissing her as he carried her to the bed. Moving on to the bed beside her, he caressed her breasts and her belly. She nibbled softly on his lower lip, even as her fingers pressed hard into his back, feeling beautiful in the candlelight, feeling desired in his arms. He slowly ran his tongue between her breasts and over her belly before coming back up. The next time, his mouth went even lower, and she knotted her fingers in his hair while his tongue teased and aroused her. It went on and on until she couldn't take it anymore, and she finally pulled him back to her, clinging to him, drawing him even closer. He moved atop her then, radiating heat, and reaching for her hand, he kissed her fingertips one by one. He kissed her cheek and her nose, and then her mouth again. And when he finally entered her, she arched her back and moaned, knowing that she wanted him more than she'd ever wanted another man. They moved together, both of them fully attuned to the other's needs, each of them trying to please the other, and she felt her body shiver with growing urgency. When the massive wave of pleasure crested over her, she cried out. But as soon as the feeling passed, it began to build again. She climaxed over and over, an endless sequence of pleasure. And when he finally climaxed as well, Hope was exhausted, her body wet with perspiration. She was breathing hard as True held her. Even then, his hands never stopped moving over her skin, and as the candles burned lower, she let herself drift on the tide of what they had just shared. Later, they made love again, this time more slowly, but with the same intensity. She climaxed even more powerfully than she had before, and was shaking with exhaustion by the time he finished. She felt utterly spent, but as the storm outside continued to rage, unbelievably, she felt her desire begin to build again. A third time wasn't possible, she thought. But it was, and only after she climaxed again was she finally able to fall into a dreamless sleep. In the morning, Hope woke to gray light streaming through the windows and the aroma of coffee drifting from the kitchen. She grabbed a robe from the bathroom and padded down the hallway, conscious of a ravenous hunger. Only then did she remember that they hadn't eaten the night before. True was at the table, and she noticed that he'd already set out scrambled eggs and sliced fruit. He was dressed in the same clothing he'd worn the night before. When he saw her, he stood from the table and wrapped his arms around her.
Good morning, he said.
You too, she said. Don't kiss me, though. I haven't brushed my teeth yet.
I hope you don't mind that I made breakfast.
It's perfect, she said, admiring the spread. How long have you been awake?
A couple of hours.
You didn't sleep?
I slept enough, he shrugged, and I figured out how to work your coffee maker. Can I pour you a cup?
Definitely, she said. She kissed him on the cheek and took a seat before scooping some eggs and fruit onto her plate. Beyond the glass, she noticed that the rain had stopped, but if the sky was any indication, the respite was only temporary. True returned with her cup and set it beside her.
There's milk and sugar on the table, he said.
I'm impressed you found everything.
I am too, he said, sitting beside her.
She thought about how much she cared about him and how natural the morning already felt. Aside from making breakfast, what have you been doing?
I went next door and brought back some towels. A few other things, too.
Why did you need towels?
I wanted to dry off the chairs out on the deck, he said.
They're just going to get wet again.
I know, he said, but I'm hoping I have some time before that happens.
She studied him as she reached for her coffee. You're being very mysterious about all this. What's going on? Reaching for her hand, he kissed the back of it.
I love you, he said simply.
Hearing the words aloud made her feel suddenly dizzy, and she knew she felt exactly the same way about him. I love you too, she murmured.
Then will you do something for me?
Anything.
After breakfast, will you sit outside for me?
Why?
I want to draw you, he answered.
Startled, Hope nodded her assent. After breakfast, she led the way outside, and True motioned to the chair. She took a seat, feeling strangely self-conscious, both hands cradling her cup of coffee. Should I put this down? She asked, nodding at her cup.
It doesn't matter.
How do you want me to pose? He opened the sketchbook.
Just be yourself and pretend I'm not here.
It wasn't easy. No one had ever drawn her likeness before. She crossed one leg over the other, then tried again with the other leg. But what to do with the coffee? Again, she debated setting the cup aside, but she took a sip instead. She leaned forward, then tried leaning back. She turned toward the house where True was staying, then toward the ocean, then back to True. Nothing felt right, but she noticed that he was staring at her with quiet concentration. How am I supposed to pretend you're not here with you looking at me like that?
I don't know, he said with a laugh. I've never been on the other side.
Some help you are, she teased,
and tucked a leg beneath her, trying to get comfortable. Better, she thought. Thankfully, Scotty had followed them out, and she decided to focus on him as he lay curled beneath the kitchen window. By then, True had descended into silence, and she watched him pick up the pencil. His eyes flickered from her to the sketch and back again, and she noted the confident movement of his hand as he drew and smudged with practiced ease. Occasionally, he would squint or furrow his brow, and she knew he wasn't even aware of it. Somehow, that flash of nakedness beneath his assured demeanor made her want him even more. When the clouds began to darken again, they both knew it was time to stop. Would you like to see it? It's not finished, but there's enough to show the general idea. Maybe after I shower? She demurred, rising from her seat. True collected the pad and the pencils, and halting just inside the doorway, he kissed her tenderly. He pulled her close, and she leaned into him, inhaling his scent, wondering again at the mysterious forces that had brought them together.
Together. After her shower, Hope sat beside True on the couch as he showed her his drawing of her, as well as others in his sketchbook. She took her time admiring them. Later, when the rain tapered off, they ventured out for lunch at a cafe on Ocean Isle Beach, while the storm rose to a fury beyond the windows. When she finally had to start getting ready for the rehearsal dinner, True sat on the edge of the bed, his gaze steady in her direction. There was something about watching a woman put on makeup that he'd always found sexy, and he sensed that she enjoyed having him as an audience. At the door, when it was time for her to leave, they kissed for a long time. He held her close, imprinting her body upon his, and stood on the front porch, waving as she pulled away. She'd asked him to take Scotty out later, and said he was welcome to stay at the cottage if he wished. He made a quick trip next door to pick up a steak and some side items, and prepared the meal in Hope's kitchen. As he ate, he tried to imagine Hope among her friends, wondering whether they would be able to see in her face all that had happened in the last few days. He spent some time adding further detail to the drawing of her that he'd started earlier, stopping only when he was finally satisfied. Still not ready to put the pencils aside, however, he started another drawing of the two of them standing on the beach, facing each other in profile. She didn't need to be there for that. It was enough to imagine the scene, and the work went quickly. By the time he stopped for the night, hours had passed, and he felt Hope's absence like an ache. She made it back to the cottage by midnight. They made love, but she was still exhausted from the night before, and soon after, he heard her breathing change as she fell asleep in his arms. For him, sleep was elusive. Their time together here would be ending soon, yet he knew that she was the woman with whom he wanted to spend the rest of his life. He stared at the ceiling, trying desperately to reconcile those two realities. In the morning, True was quieter than usual. Instead of speaking, he held her for a long time in bed, and she felt her entire being resound with the depths of her feelings for him. But it frightened her, in the same way she suspected that it frightened True. What she wanted was for all this, these last few days, to last forever, while time stopped everywhere else. But the clock seemed to be ticking louder with every passing minute. It was still raining moderately when they got out of bed, but they decided to take another walk on the beach nonetheless. Hope found rain jackets in the closet, and they brought Scotty out. They held hands as they walked, and by unspoken agreement, they paused at the spot where they'd met for the very first time. He kissed her, and when she pulled back, he took her hands in his. "I think I wanted all of this to happen from the moment I met you." "What part? Sleeping with me or falling in love?" "Both," he admitted. "When did you know?" "I think I knew we might sleep together when we had wine on the porch after dinner. I didn't know I'd fall for you until the night you came over for dinner. She squeezed his hand. I'm sorry about turning you away when you tried to kiss me for the first time. Don't be. They started the trek back, stopping in at the house where True was staying. On the answering machine was a message from his father, saying that he hoped to arrive at the house between 2 and 3. Which would work out perfectly, Hope thought. She'd be leaving around then for the wedding. Even though the ceremony started at 6, she had to be there early for photographs. True gave her a quick tour of the house, while Scotty explored on his own, and she had to admit it was more tasteful than she'd imagined it would be. Despite her initial prejudice, she could imagine renting the place with her friends for a week and having a fantastic time. When they got to the master bedroom, Hope gestured at the huge whirlpool tub. "Shall we?" she suggested. The next thing she knew, they'd disrobed, tossing their clothes and jackets in the dryer. Once submerged in the foaming water, she leaned back against True, sighing as he gently moved the washcloth over her breasts and belly, her arms and legs. They had an early lunch in bathrobes while their clothes continued to dry. Afterward, Hope slipped back into her dry, warmed outfit, and the two of them sat at the table talking, until it was time for her to return to the cottage and start getting ready. Like the day before, he watched from his spot on the bed as she styled her hair and put on her makeup. The bridesmaid dress and new shoes came next, and when she was finished, she did a quick pirouette for him. "Okay?" "Stunning," he said, his admiring gaze underscoring his sincerity. "I'm sorely tempted to kiss you, but I don't want to mess up your lipstick." "I'll risk it," she said, leaning over to kiss him. "If you weren't supposed to meet your father today, I'd ask you to join me. I would have had to purchase appropriate attire." "I'll bet you're incredibly handsome in a suit." She patted his chest and perched next to him on the bed. "Are you nervous about meeting your father?" "Not really." "What if he doesn't remember much about your mum?" "Then I imagine our meeting will be a short one." "You're rarely not interested in who he is, what he's like, where he's been all these years." "Not particularly." "I don't know how you can remain so detached about all this. It seems to me that he might want a relationship of some sort with you. Even a minor one."
"I've considered that, but I doubt that's true."
"But he flew you out here.
And at the same time, I've yet to see him. If he wanted a relationship, I suspect he would have come by earlier in the week."
"Then why do you think he wanted you to come?"
"I think," True finally answered, "he wants to tell me why he left my mother."
A few minutes later, True walked Hope to her car, holding 2 umbrellas so that she wouldn't get wet. "I know it sounds silly, but I think I'm going to miss you," she said.
"Me too," he responded.
"Will you tell me what happens with your father?"
"Of course. And I'll make sure to get Scotty out for a walk too."
"I don't know what time I'll be back. It might be late. You're welcome to wait at the cottage for me. I won't be hurt if you're already asleep when I get in.
Have a good time."
"Thank you," she said, slipping behind the wheel. Though she gave him a cheery wave as she backed out, for some reason he felt a touch of foreboding as she vanished from sight, making him wonder why the feeling had arisen in the first place. Father Time. Deciding it was probably best to leave Scotty at the cottage, True gathered his sketchbook and pencils and went back to the house, awaiting the visit from his father. He continued with the drawing of him and Hope, the work coming easily. Soon, he progressed to the point where he began focusing on the finer details, an unconscious signal that the sketch was approaching completion. Lost in his work, it took him a moment to realize that someone was knocking. His father. Rising from the table, he crossed through the living room. He paused when he grasped the knob, readying himself. Upon opening the door, he saw the face of his father for the very first time.
To his surprise, he recognized some of his own features in the old man who stood before him, the same dark blue eyes and a small dimple in the chin. His father's hair was thinning, and what little remained had turned white with only faint streaks of gray. He was stooped slightly, pale and on the frail side. The jacket he was wearing seemed to envelop him, as though it had been purchased for someone much larger. Over the sound of the storm, True could hear him wheezing. "Hello, True," he finally said, the words labored. In one hand he held an umbrella, and True noticed a briefcase on the porch. "Hello, Harry. May I come in?" "Of course." His father bent to pick up his briefcase and froze, wincing. True reached for it. "Can I get that for you?" "Please," Harry answered. "The older I get, the farther away the ground seems. Come in." True retrieved the briefcase as his father stepped past him, slowly shuffling into the living room and toward the windows. True joined him, standing by his side, watching his father in his peripheral vision. "It's quite a storm here," Harry said, "but it's even worse inland. It took forever to get here because there was so much water on the highway. My driver had to make more than a few detours." Because it was more of a comment than a question, True said nothing. Instead, he studied his father, thinking that it was akin to seeing the future. "This," True thought, "is what I will eventually look like if I live as long as he has."
"Has the house been satisfactory?"
"It's big," True responded, recalling the way Hope had first described it.
"But yes, it's a beautiful home. I had it built a few years ago. My wife wanted a place at the beach, but we've hardly ever used it."
He took two long, wheezy breaths before going on.
"Was there enough food in the refrigerator?"
"Too much," True answered.
"There's probably going to be a lot left over when I leave."
"That's fine.
I'll have the cleaning service take care of it. I'm just glad it arrived in time. I'd forgotten about it until you were already in the air, but there was little I could do. I was in the ICU, and they don't allow phone calls, so I asked my daughter to handle the details. She made arrangements with the property manager to receive the delivery."
The words continued to roll through his mind, even after his father finished speaking. Wife, ICU, daughter. True found it hard to concentrate. Hope had been right in predicting that the meeting would feel a bit surreal.
"I see," was all True could think to say. "I'd also like to apologize for not setting you up with a rental car instead of having a driver pick you up. It might have been more convenient for you." "It didn't bother me. I wouldn't have known where to go. You said you were in the ICU." "I was released from the hospital yesterday. My kids tried to talk me out of coming, but I couldn't miss this chance to meet you." "Would you like to sit?" True asked. "I think I probably should."
They crossed to the dining room table, and Harry seemed to collapse into a chair. In the gray light streaming through the windows, he looked even more depleted than when he'd arrived. True took a seat beside him.
"May I ask why you were in the ICU?" "Lung cancer. Stage 4. I don't know much about cancer." "It's terminal," Harry said. "The doctors give me a couple of months, maybe less. Maybe a little more. It's in God's hands, I suppose. I've known since the spring."
True felt a twinge of sadness at that, though it was the kind associated with learning bad news about a stranger, not family.
"I'm sorry to hear that." "Appreciated," he said.
Despite the information he'd shared, Harry smiled.
"I don't have any regrets. I've had a good life, and unlike a lot of people, I've been given the chance to say goodbye. Or even, in your case, hello."
He pulled a handkerchief from his jacket pocket and coughed into it.
When he finished, he took a couple of labored, wet-sounding breaths.
I want to thank you for making the trip here, he added. When I sent the ticket, I wasn't sure you would agree to come. Initially, I wasn't either. But you were curious. Yes, True admitted. I was too, he said. Ever since I learned that you existed, I didn't know about you until last year. And yet you waited to meet me. Yes. Why? I didn't want to complicate your life. Or mine.
It was an honest answer. But True wasn't quite sure what to make of it.
How did you find out about me? That's a long story, but I'll do my best to be brief. Frank Jessup, a man I knew from way back, happened to be in town. I hadn't seen him in almost 40 years, but we'd kept in minimal contact since then. Christmas cards, the occasional letter, but no more than that. Anyway, when we were having lunch, he made a reference to your mother, and mentioned that there were rumors she'd had a son less than a year after I left the country. He didn't say it was mine, but I think he wondered about it. After the conversation, I wondered too, so I hired an investigator, and he went to work, which took time. There are still a lot of people afraid to speak about your grandfather, even though he's not around any longer, and we both know the country has gone to hell, so records are sketchy. But long story short, the guy was good, and I eventually sent someone to the lodge in Hwangi. He took photographs of you, and when I saw them, I knew right away. You have my eyes, but you got your facial structure from your mother.
Harry turned toward the window, letting the silence hang. True thought about something the man had said only moments before.
What did you mean when you said that you didn't want to complicate my life? True asked.
It was a few beats before his father answered.
People talk about truth like it's the solution to all of life's problems. I've been around long enough to know that isn't the case, and that sometimes truth can do more harm than good.
True said nothing. He knew his father was building to a point.
That's what I've been considering. Ever since I realized that you'd agreed to come, I've been asking myself the question of how much I should tell you. There are some aspects to the past that might be painful for you, and parts that, in retrospect, you might wish I hadn't told you. So I suppose what I say next is up to you. Do you want the whole truth, or selected parts of it? Remember, though, I'm not the one who's going to live with the knowledge for years to come. My regrets will be much more short-lived, for obvious reasons.
True brought his hands together, considering the question. The opaque references and careful phrasing made him curious, but the warning gave him pause. How much did he really want to know? Instead of answering right away, he rose from the table.
I'm getting some water. Would you like a glass? I'll have hot tea, if it's not a problem.
Not at all, True said. He found a tea kettle in one of the cabinets, filled it with water, and set it on the burner. In yet another cabinet he found packets of tea. He filled his glass with water, took a drink, then refilled it. It didn't take long for the kettle to whistle, and he prepared the cup and brought it to the table. He took his seat again. Through all of that, his father said nothing. Like True, the man didn't seem inclined to fill the silence with small talk. Interesting.
Have you made up your mind yet?
His father asked.
No,
True answered.
Is there anything you do want to know?
I want to know about my mother, he thought again. But sitting beside the old man at the table led to an entirely different question instead.
First, tell me about you, he said.
His father scratched at an age spot on his cheek.
All right, he said. I was born in 1914, in Colorado, in a sod house, if you can believe that. Three older sisters. In my teens, the Depression hit and times were tough. But my mother was a teacher and she always stressed education. I went to the University of Colorado and picked up a couple of degrees. After that, I joined the army. I think I mentioned in my letter that I was in the Corps of Engineers, right?
True nodded.
At first, most of my work was stateside, but then the war came. I spent time in North Africa, Italy, and then finally Europe. Mainly demolition at first. But by late 1944 and the spring of 1945, it was primarily bridge building under Montgomery. The Allies were moving quickly into Germany by then, and there were a lot of water barriers, including the Rhine. Anyway, throughout the war, I grew friendly with one of the engineers from the British side. He'd grown up in Rhodesia and had a lot of contacts. He told me about the mining and the minerals just waiting to be tapped, so after the war, I followed him there. He helped me find a job at the Bushtick mine. I worked there for a few years and met your mother.
He took a sip of tea. But True knew he was also debating how much to say.
After that, I returned to the States. I went to work for Exxon and met my wife Lucy at the company Christmas party. She was the sister of one of the executives, and we hit it off. Started dating, got married, had children. I worked in a lot of different countries over the years, some safe, others not so much. Lucy and the kids either joined me there or stayed in the States while I did my time overseas. A perfect company family, so to speak, which aided my career. I rose through the ranks and worked there right up until retirement. Finished as one of the vice presidents and made a fortune along the way. We moved to North Carolina 11 years ago. Lucy had grown up here and wanted to go home.
True scrutinized him, thinking of the new family and life that his father had created after his time in Africa.
How many children do you have?
Three. Two boys and a girl. All of them now in their 30s. My wife and I will celebrate 40 years this November. If I make it that long.
True took a sip of water.
Is there anything you want to know about me? I think I have a pretty good idea about you. The investigator filled me in. So you know I have a son. Your grandson.
Yes.
Do you have any desire to meet him?
Yes,
he answered.
But it's probably not a good idea. I'm a stranger, and I'm dying. I don't see how it would do him any good.
True thought he was probably right about that, but...
For me, though, you felt differently. Same reality, but you drew a different conclusion. You're my son.
True took a sip from his water glass.
Tell me about my mother, he finally said.
His father lowered his chin, the words coming more softly.
She was beautiful, he said. One of the most beautiful women I've ever seen. She was a good deal younger than I was, but she was intelligent, and mature for her age. She could speak at length about poetry and art, things I knew nothing about, with passion and expertise. And she had the most wonderful laugh, the kind that just draws you right in. I think I fell in love with her the first night I met her. She was extraordinary.
He wiped his mouth with the handkerchief again.
We spent a lot of the next year together. She was at the university, and the mine had a laboratory there. We saw each other whenever we could. I was working long hours, of course, but we'd make the time. I remember that she used to carry with her this book of poetry by Yeats, and I can't tell you how many times we read those poems aloud to each other.
He paused, his breath coming unsteadily.
She fancied tomatoes. Had them with every meal we ever ate together. Always sprinkled with a bit of sugar. She adored butterflies, and she thought Humphrey Bogart in Casablanca was the sexiest man she'd ever seen. I began smoking even before I joined the army, but after she told me about Bogart, I began to hold the cigarette the same way he did in that movie, between the forefinger and thumb.
He rotated the teacup, seemingly lost in thought.
I taught her to drive a car, you know. She didn't know how until we met, and I remember thinking that was strange, especially since she grew up in a farm. And over time, I began to sense something else about her. Beneath the surface, as smart and mature as she was, I noticed a deep-seated insecurity, even though it made no sense to me. To me, she had everything and was everything I'd ever wanted. But the more I got to know her, the more secretive I realized she really was. For a long time, I knew little about her father, or the power he wielded. She hardly ever spoke about him. But toward the end of our relationship, she would often make me promise to take her with me when I returned to the States. And the way she begged sometimes made me think that her desire had more to do with escaping her circumstances than how she felt about me. Nor would she ever introduce me to her father, or let me visit the farm. We always had to meet in out-of-the-way places. And strangely, she never referred to him as her father or her dad. It was always the Colonel. And all of those things eventually made me wonder.
Wonder what?
I think this is where you need to ask yourself again how much you really want to know. Last chance.
True closed his lips and nodded.
Go on.
When she finally began to open up about your grandfather, she would describe two different people entirely. In one version, she adored him and stressed how much they needed each other. But the next time she spoke of him, she would tell me that she hated him. She would say that he was evil, that she wanted to get as far away from him as possible, and never wanted to see him again. I don't know the full details of what went on in that house when she was growing up, nor am I sure I want to know. What I do know is that when her father found out about me, your mother panicked. She showed up at my place, hysterical and babbling that we had to leave the country right then. Because the Colonel was furious, there wasn't even time to gather my things. I couldn't calm her down, but when she realized that I wasn't going to do what she asked, she ran off. That was the last I ever saw of her. At the time, I didn't know she was pregnant. Maybe if she'd told me, things would have been different.
I like to think that I would have gone after her and helped her get away. But I never got the chance.
He brought his hands together, squeezing as though hoping for strength.
They showed up at my house that night, after I'd gone to sleep. A group of men. They roughed me up pretty good, and put a hood over my head before tossing me into the trunk of a car. They drove me to some kind of dwelling with a cellar, and after being dragged from the car, the next thing I knew, I was tumbling down a set of stairs. I was knocked unconscious, and when I woke, I could smell the dank and mold. I'd been handcuffed to some pipes, which hurt like hell because my shoulder had been dislocated in the fall.
He took a few long breaths, as if gathering his strength for a final push.
When they finally took the hood off, a flashlight was shined in my eyes. I couldn't see a thing, but he was there, the colonel. He told me that I had two choices. I could either leave Rhodesia the following morning, or I could die in the cellar, handcuffed to the pipes without food or water.
He turned toward True.
I'd been in war. I'd seen terrible things. I'd been shot, got myself a purple heart, and there'd been times when I wondered how I'd survive. But I'd never been more scared than in that moment, because I knew he was a stone-cold killer. You could hear it in his voice. The following day, I got in my car and didn't stop driving until I reached South Africa. I caught a flight back to the States. I never saw or spoke to your mother again.
He swallowed.
I've spent my life knowing that I was a coward for doing what I did, for leaving her with him, for vanishing completely from her life. And not a day has gone by when I haven't regretted it. I mean, I love my wife, but I've never felt for her the deep burning passion that I felt with your mother. I left Evelyn with that man, and I know in my heart that it's the worst thing I've ever done. You should also know that I didn't come here for your forgiveness. Some things can't be forgiven. But I want you to know that if I'd known about you, things would have been different. I understand those are only words, and that you don't know me, but it's the truth. And I'm sorry for the way everything turned out.
True said nothing, realizing that it wasn't difficult to reconcile the story he'd just heard with the grandfather he'd known. It left him disgusted, but more than that, he felt it give rise to a piercing sorrow for his mother, and pity for the man who was sitting beside him at the table. His father motioned toward the briefcase.
Would you mind handing me that?
True reached for the briefcase and placed it on the table, watching as his father opened the lid.
I also wanted to give you some things, he said. I put them in my trunk on the day I left Rhodesia, and over the years, I completely forgot about them. But when I saw your photograph, I had one of my sons find the trunk in the attic and bring it down. In the event you didn't visit, I was planning to send them to you.
Inside the briefcase was an envelope, set atop a stack of drawing paper that had yellowed at the edges. His father handed to the envelope.
One of my friends back then was a photographer, and he used to bring his camera with him everywhere. There are a couple of shots of the two of us, but most of them are of your mother. He tried to convince her to become a model.
True slid the photographs from the envelope. There were 8 in total. The first he examined showed his mother and father seated together in front of a river, both of them laughing. The second was also of the two of them, staring at each other in profile, similar to the drawing he'd been working on of Hope and himself. The others were all of his mother in various poses and outfits, with clean backgrounds, a photographic style common in the late 1940s. His throat tightened at the sight of her, and he felt a sense of sudden loss he hadn't expected. His father handed over the drawings next. The first was a self-portrait of his mother staring at a reflection of herself in the mirror. Despite her beauty, her darkly shadowed expression gave her a haunted quality. The next was a drawing of his mother from behind. She was draped in a sheet and gazing over her shoulder, making True wonder whether she had used a similar photograph as inspiration. There were three more self-portraits, and several landscape scenes similar to those that True created for Andrew. One of them, however, depicted the family's main house before the fire, with imposing columns gracing the veranda. He realized that he'd forgotten how it had looked then. When True finally set the drawings aside, his father cleared his throat.
"I thought she was good enough to open a studio, but she wasn't interested in that. She said that she drew because she wanted to lose herself in the process. At the time, I wasn't sure what that meant, but I spent many afternoons watching as she sketched. She had a charming habit of licking her lips whenever she was working, and she was never completely satisfied with the results. In her mind, none of the drawings were ever finished."
True took a sip of water, thinking.
"Was she happy?" he finally asked.
His father held True's gaze.
"I don't know how to answer that. I like to think she was happy when we were together, but..."
His father trailed off, and True mulled the implications of what his father had told him earlier, the words still left unspoken. About what had really happened in that house when his mother was growing up.
"If it's all right with you, I'd like to ask you a question," his father said.
"Yes?"
"Is there anything you want from me?"
"I'm not sure I understand the question."
"Would you like to keep a line of communication open? Or would you prefer that I vanish after I leave here today? I've already told you that I don't have much time left, but after all these years, I thought it best for you to be able to make the decision."
True stared at the old man seated next to him, considering it.
"Yes," he finally answered, surprising himself. "I'd like to be able to speak with you again."
"All right,"
his father nodded.
"How about my other kids?"
he asked.
"Or my wife? Would you like to speak with them?"
True thought about it before finally shaking his head.
"No,"
he said.
"Unless they'd like to speak with me.
We're strangers. And like you, I suppose, I have no desire to add further complications to any of our lives."
His father offered half a smile at that.
"Fair enough. But I do have a favor to ask of you. Feel free to say no, of course."
"What is it?"
"Do you happen to have a photograph of my grandson that I could see?"
His father stayed for another 40 minutes. He said that his wife and children supported his decision to make contact with True, despite their confusion about a relation they'd never met, someone sprung from a past that predated any of them. When he added that the drive back to Charlotte was a long one and that he had no desire to worry them further, True knew it was his father's way of saying that it was time for him to go. True toted the briefcase and held the umbrella over his father as they descended the stairs to the car that had been waiting in the driveway. True watched the car as it pulled away, then walked to the cottage to let Scotty out. Despite the storm, he wanted to walk the beach, needing open space and time to think. It had been a surprising encounter, to say the least. Never had he imagined his father as a family man, someone married to the same woman for decades, or that he'd fled the country in fear of his life because of True's grandfather. As he pushed through the sand, True couldn't shake a mounting feeling of revulsion for the most dominant male figure of his childhood. There was also the family he'd never known about. Half-siblings, three of them. And though he'd declined to meet them, he did wonder about them. Who were they? What were they like? He doubted that any of them had felt the need to leave home the moment they turned 18 as he had. Their lives had surely been nothing like his. For a while, he tried to picture what his own life would have looked like had his mother and father found a way to be together, but it felt too far-fetched, and he soon gave up. Staring out at the churning surf, he thought to himself that there were still too many unanswered questions, too many things he would never learn, even about his mother. All he knew was that her short life had been even more tragic than he'd imagined, and if his father had brought her any joy at all, he was glad for that. True found himself wishing that this meeting with his father had happened years earlier, when they would have had more time to get to know each other. But some things were not meant to be, and as the sun began to set, he turned back toward the house. He walked slowly, absently keeping his eye on Scotty, weighed down by the afternoon's revelations and an ineffable sense of regret. It was nearly dark by the time he got back to the house. He left Scotty on the back porch, while he showered and put on some dry clothing, then gathered up the photographs and drawings that his father had left. At Hope's place, he took a seat at the kitchen table, examining the images. He wished that Hope were with him. She would know how to help make sense of things, and without her, he felt on edge. To soothe himself, he returned to work on the drawing of the two of them while the rain continued to fall. Beyond the windows, lightning flickered, mirroring his own roiling emotions, and he thought of the odd parallels between himself and his father. Harry had left his mother in Africa and returned to America. In a couple of days, True would return to Africa, leaving Hope here in the States. His father and mother couldn't find a way to be together, but True wanted to believe that he and Hope could be different. He wanted the two of them to make a life together, and as he continued to sketch, he wondered how to make that happen. Exhausted, True didn't realize Hope had returned from the wedding until he felt her slip into the bed beside him. It was past midnight, and she'd already undressed, her skin hot to the touch. Without a word, she began to kiss him. He responded with caresses of his own, and when they began to make love, he tasted the salty tang of her tears. But he said nothing. It was all he could do to not cry himself at the thought of what the next day might bring. Afterward, she curled into him, and he held her as she fell asleep with her head on his chest. True listened to the sound of her breathing, hoping it would settle him, but it didn't. Instead, he lay in the dark and stared at the ceiling, feeling strangely and entirely alone. No more tomorrows. True woke at dawn, just as the morning light began to stream through the window, and reached for Hope, only to realize that the bed was empty. Propping himself up on his elbow, he wiped the sleep from his eyes, surprised and a little disappointed. He'd wanted to spend the morning lingering in bed with Hope, whispering and making love, staving off the reality that this would be their final day together. Rising from the bed, True threw on the jeans and shirt he'd been wearing the day before. On the pillowcase he saw smudges of mascara, a remnant of last night's tears, and felt a wave of panic at the thought of losing Hope. He wanted another day, another week, another year with her. He wanted a lifetime of years, and he was willing to do whatever she needed so they could stay together forever. He mentally rehearsed what he would say to Hope as he headed toward the kitchen.
He smelled coffee, but to his surprise, Hope wasn't there. He poured himself a cup and continued his search, poking his head into the dining room and family room to no avail. He finally traced her whereabouts to the back porch, where he could see her beyond the window sitting in a rocker. The rain had stopped, and as she stared toward the ocean, Tu thought again that she was the most beautiful woman he'd ever seen. He paused only slightly before pushing the door open. Hope turned at the sound. Though she offered up a tentative smile, her eyes were rimmed with red. The exquisite sadness of her expression made him wonder how long she'd been alone with her thoughts, replaying the impossibilities of their situation.
"Good morning," she said, her voice soft.
"Good morning." When they kissed, he felt a hesitancy from her he hadn't expected, and it suddenly rendered moot all the speeches he had rehearsed. He had the sense that even if he said the words, she was no longer ready to hear them. Something had shifted, he realized with foreboding, even if he wasn't sure what.
"I didn't wake you, did I?" she asked.
"No," he answered. "I didn't hear you leave the bedroom."
"I try to be quiet."
The words sounded rote. "I'm surprised you're even awake, since you got in so late. Sleeping in wasn't meant to be, I guess." He watched as she took a sip of coffee before going on. "Did you sleep okay?"
"Not really," he admitted.
"I didn't either. I've been awake since 4. She motioned with her cup toward the rocker. "I dried your seat, but you might want to give it another wipe just to make sure."
"All right."
Grabbing the towel she'd left on the seat, he ran it over the wooden planks before perching on the edge of the rocker. His insides were roiling. For the first time in days, the sky showed patches of blue, though a quilt of white clouds still trailed out over the water, the tail end of the storm receding in the distance. Hope turned back toward the ocean, as though unable to face him, saying nothing.
"Was it raining when you woke up?"
he asked into the silence. Small talk, he knew, but he wasn't sure what else to do. She shook her head.
"No. It stopped sometime last night. Probably not long after I got home."
He angled his rocker toward hers, waiting to see if she would do the same with hers. She didn't. Nor did she speak. He cleared his throat.
"How was the wedding?"
"It was beautiful," she said, still refusing to look at him. "Ellen was glowing, and a lot less stressed than I thought she would be. Especially considering her phone call the other day.
The rain wasn't a problem."
They ended up holding the ceremony on the porch. People had to stand shoulder to shoulder, but that made it more intimate somehow. And the reception went off without a hitch. The food, the band, the cake. It was a lot of fun for everyone.
"I'm glad it went well."
She seemed lost in thought for a moment before finally turning to face him. "How did it go with your father? I've been wondering about that since I left yesterday."
"It was..." Tu hesitated, searching for the right word.
"Interesting." "How is he? What's he like?"
"He's not what I imagined."
"How so?"
"I suppose I was expecting more of a roguish figure. But he's not like that at all. He's in his mid-70s, and he's been married for almost 40 years to the same woman. He has 3 adult children, and worked for one of the big oil companies. He reminded me of many of the guests from America who visit the lodge."
"Did he tell you what happened between him and your mother?" Tu nodded, then started at the beginning. For the first time that morning, Hope seemed to emerge from her shell, escaping in the moment the prison of her dark thoughts. Mesmerized by his account, she couldn't hide a shock when he finished. "And he was sure your grandfather was the one who kidnapped him?" she asked. "He'd never met him, so it wasn't as though he could recognize the voice."
"It was my grandfather," Tu said. "There's no doubt in my mind. Just as there wasn't any in his.
That's terrible. My grandfather could be a terrible man. How do you feel about it? Hope probed, her voice gentle.
It was a long time ago.
That's not much of an answer.
It's also the truth.
Does it make you think any differently about your father?
In a way, he said. I'd always assumed he just ran off without a care for my mother. But I was wrong.
Would you mind sharing the photographs and the drawings?
Chu went back inside and fetched them from the end table. Handing her the stack, he took a seat in his rocker again and watched as Hope began to examine them.
Your mother was very beautiful, she commented.
Yes, she was.
You can tell she was in love with him, and that he felt the same about her.
Chu nodded, his thoughts focused more on Hope than the events of the day before. He was trying to memorize everything about the way she looked, every quirk and gesture. When she finished with the photographs, she lifted the first of the drawings, the one of his mother staring at her reflection in the mirror.
She was very talented, she said, but I think your work is better.
She was still young, and she had more natural ability than I do.
When she finished examining the stack of drawings, she took another sip of coffee, finishing the cup. I know you.